This is the Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We have a new episode every week. Each week, we talk about hot topics in film and television. We talk about things that are on ours or our listeners' minds, and we just dive into film and television as an overall universe. Be sure to get the Ho and the Go with our Apple or Android apps. You can also find us on iTunes, where reviews are appreciated, your podcast app of choice. We are on Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, and Stitcher. Please share the show on your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, whatever it is. My name is Aaron Peterson, and I am going to introduce this special episode. This is as some of you may or may not know, I do a couple completely separate podcasts from The Hollywood Outsider, and one is called The Blacklist Exposed, and we dive into that particular show each week and what is going on the Blacklist, what's going on with Jane Spader's characters, what's going on with Megan Boone's characters, and it's kind of a documentary of each episode is a way that I would describe it. And we do that every week throughout the season, and we've gotten a lot of great interviews. We've had Amir Arison, we've had the creator John Bokenkamp, and we also just had the star of the show, Megan Boone. So why am I telling you this? It's because I'm going to share that interview with you guys here. I talked to my co-host Troy Heinrichs, and he was absolutely on board with, you know what, it's a great interview, it's a big interview, it's a very popular show. It should go out to our listeners as well. So I'm going to put it in our feed, and hopefully you guys will enjoy our exclusive interview with Megan Boone, star of The Blacklist, as she talks about it, being an actress and a lot of other things in her career and her path to play Liz Keene on NBC's The Blacklist. It's a very insightful interview. It's honestly one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. And this is going against like Neil deGrasse Tyson and Kevin Pollak and Kiefer Sutherland. I think she might have topped them just because of her honesty and her openness and her lack of canned responses. She's just a very insightful and very interesting person to talk to. And I'm going to play you this whole interview as a whole, so you're going to hear some of the Blacklist stuff. And I hope if you are a Blacklist fan, you will check out The Blacklist Exposed. Just go to theblacklistexposed.com. Like I said, it's a side endeavor of myself, the creator of The Hollywood Outsider. And I fully endorse it, if that matters at all. Mostly because I'm on it. Let's be honest. It's a very good show. Troy and I put a lot of work into it, and I hope you guys enjoy it. But this interview is on its own, and I really think you're going to enjoy what she has to say. I'm not going to talk anymore. I'm just going to let you hear it. Here is our interview with Megan Boone from The Blacklist Exposed.
Hi, it's Megan Boone, and you're listening to Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Troy, before we start the interview, what was your take after the interview was over?
After the interview was over, I was just amazed, quite honestly. Actually, you couldn't see it because we're obviously on the radio, but I did tear up a little bit during that interview as she was talking about body image and some of the things that she's dealt with over the course of her life and the course of playing this character. And I just found it very moving to know that she's that okay with the situations that she's been put through, that she's risen up, not to, you know, pull from Andra Day during season 3, right? The Rise Up song. But she has risen to the challenge, and she's taken the reins, and she's taken her character. And we talked about that a little bit last week on the show about how we want Liz to stand up for herself and take the matters into her own hands. And she talks about that a little bit in this interview, and I thought that was really great to hear, that she wants more for the Liz character. She wants Liz to have a superpower, as we talked about. I think that's going to be absolutely fantastic.
And the one thing that you're going to find from this interview, guys, we went into this interview with the intent of, and this is very important to me personally, I want to know about Megan Boone. Like, we know about Liz. We've seen Liz for 3 seasons. So a lot of what she can tell us about Liz, we either already know or she can't tell us because she's not going to give anything away. We don't do gotcha interviews at the Blacklist Exposed. We just want to talk to the actors playing the characters. And I found out more about Megan Boone herself in this hour and change than I've gotten from any interview I've seen her do. I was extremely impressed. And not because of Megan Boone, the star of The Blacklist, came on her show, but because of when it was over, I wanted to talk to Megan even longer, not as an actress on this show, but as a person. I find her to be an extremely insightful and intriguing person, very respectful, just kind. I said that in the previous podcast. I just found her very, very kind and decent and not Hollywood-y, not full of herself, not focused on just selling the show. I mean, she really seems like a good and decent person. And for me, it just changed my whole perception of her as an actress. And I really loved the interview. It was just such a great interview, a great time, and a highlight of this podcast, honestly.
Very much so.
With that, enough of our yammering. Let's get into the interview. I know you want to hear it. Here is our interview with Megan Boone, star of The Blacklist.
Well, she's been manipulated, mind-altered, divorced, kidnapped, and has just been through the ringer over three seasons. Yes, you know her as Agent Elizabeth Keene, or as the Cabal blurted out to the world, Masha Rostova. But first and foremost, she was known as Megan Boone, and we are so pleased to have Megan on the podcast. Thanks for stopping by.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm having my coffee right now.
Oh, it's early for you.
Yeah, just getting going, kind of.
Do you have to shoot today?
I have the day off, actually.
So, oh, nice.
Yeah. So I'm not... I'm doing all kinds of other things instead, all kinds of other work.
What do you do on your day off? Still work?
I do. I mean, well, because of all the physical stuff I have to do, I have to make sure that I stay strong. So I have to go do really boring weightlifting exercises. That sounds exciting. And then I have a meeting at 1 with a friend who wants to start a body image podcast.
Oh, wow, that's very cool.
Yeah. I've never done anything other than acting for hire, but I'm starting to get interested in other things. I noticed that we have a lot of Brazilian teenage girls listening or watching The Blacklist.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you do.
They really like Liz Keene. And apparently there's an epidemic of all kinds of elective plastic surgery going on down there with young women.
Oh, so, no.
Yeah, so we thought I'd start... I mean, I just wanted to talk to her, talk about it, and so we're going to get together and talk about that. And then I'm going to go get... this is all very actressy. I'm looking at my calendar, and I'm going, oh, my God.
Well, you are an actress, so it's okay.
I know, but I got to go get a dress tailored today. I don't think I should keep talking about this. What are you guys up to today?
Not the usual, you know, just hanging out, talking with Blacklist fans, getting ready for season 4.
Yeah, that's cool. I wanted to come talk to you guys because I thought you guys were real gentlemen last season. Just from the bit that I heard, I follow my co-star and friend Amir on Twitter, and he announced that he was going to come on your show. And I clicked the link to listen because I love listening to him talk about work. He's extremely dedicated and enthusiastic, and sometimes it gets me going. So I was like, oh, I'm going to listen to this interview. And then I listened to the little portion that you guys had before, you know, when you guys were just talking before he called in.
Mm-hmm.
And my pregnancy came up and you were just very respectful and you didn't consider it to be anything that like you guys needed to talk about or the labor. And I thought it was such gentlemanly conduct that I wanted to encourage that in people. And thank you, you know, personally. So I told my assistant, I made a note on my calendar that when I came back in season 4, I wanted to go on your show.
Oh, wow. So you guys,
here we are.
Being a gentleman pays off. It does.
Yeah, it's like we want to be part of Hollywood, but we don't really want to be part of Hollywood. We want to just be more fans enjoying Hollywood and just bringing the fans and the people closer together is really the key without having to do all the media buzz stuff that people like to throw at people all the time.
He's politically correct. I have a daughter, and I know if I was in the limelight, how I would feel about it, and that's really all it was for me.
That's exactly the kind of sentiment that, I mean, that's what it felt like was behind your conduct. I think that's what encourages people. Having children encourages people to be morally correct and not just behave on habit and instinct, you know, when it comes to public behavior, social behavior, and so forth. I know for me, I feel the same exact way been totally life-changing having a daughter and thinking instead about 2020, thinking more about 2050 and 2060 and like what, how my conduct and what I do now is going to affect particularly women in those times.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it meant a lot to me and I appreciated it to hear some people who are in media, who are communicating with fans whom actually mean quite a lot to me as well. And who are, you know, behaving in a way that I think that, you know, is meaningful to me. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. We appreciate that. Kids should always be off limits unless you want to talk about them yourself. That's the way I see it.
And, you know, women's bodies and what they decide to do with their lives and their personal lives. The thing that's interesting to me is that I became an actress because I really loved stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my foray into being taken by the grace and my fandom of Audrey Hepburn. Before that, it was mostly TV shows and actually having just like a natural inclination to put on plays on my back porch and the things that just felt really natural to me that came from a place that had nothing to do with being a girl or a boy or like any of the things that become a huge, huge part of your life once you're an adult. They kind of like be, whether you're a woman or you're pretty or you're not pretty or you're well spoken or can't sometimes seem to find the words. All these things really start to define your experience. And I always want to just go back to my interest and love and story and try to like wipe away all the things that are sort of projected onto you by the weird frenzy that has become the entertainment industry.
Well, maybe that's a really great segue question. So we have two episodes this season with The Djinn and with Lady Ambrosia. How did those two episodes resonate with you in this concept of bodily image and, in, you know, motherly's, you know, trying to, in this case, in the Lady Ambrosia episode, you know, she thought she was really doing what was best for kids, which clearly was not the case. So how did you resonate with those two episodes?
Yeah. Our show is really, really crazy. These writers, I really don't know how they do it. They come up with the most incredible stuff. Well, I thought, you know, my favorite part of that episode, and generally my favorite parts of any episode, are like the speech written for Red when he, you know, gives his moral take on the situation. You know, even though the cops are arriving and, you know, we're all just kind of standing around listening to Red tell us about how that man imposed his idea of gender and sexuality on his son who preferred being a gay man to being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're definitely entering into territory that I don't really take on and I can't pretend to fully understand because you know, I'm a heterosexual woman, so I can't like write to the, you know, plight of the homosexual man or the transgender at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That would be something if I were to go into a project with those kinds of characters or themes that I needed to understand more, it would probably take me a long period of time to really investigate it and try to, I mean, I think there's a part of me that really can understand. I certainly understand identity.
Mm-hmm.
I understand how it feels to be in a world that tells you you need to feel or be a certain way in order to be an actress, be a young actress on a TV show in particular. I can understand how people, especially at this generation, are coming to a point where they want to break through those preconceived notions. And that's about as far as my understanding goes at this point in my experience. But that was the theme of that and of that episode. And to think we make 22 of these a year, it's hard to fully ascertain or like immerse yourself in these experiences that you know, Red and Liz and everyone goes through. I was just talking to Amir about that actually yesterday. We were in the war room shooting a scene. A lot is going on with Liz, let's just put it that way. But there's also, because it is a procedural in a lot of ways, and it's a little bit of a comic book too. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of live in this world of a comic book and a procedural, but have all of these extremely challenging circumstances, particularly Liz, sort of live with you wherever you go. Even if you're just going about your day in order to move the procedural aspect of the show forward, because you really are, as a character, in service to like giving the information and making sure the audience follows, because so much happens in an episode, you know. Mm-hmm. And so then how do you infuse that new information that you're providing in exposition to like with what's going on in the show? And I've gotten better, but I have to say, even after 3.5 years or so of this, I really feel like, oh my gosh, I don't think I'll ever have a challenge like this again. It's really one of the hardest things to do. Demir was like, last season, man, it wasn't, you know, the hardest thing wasn't like trying to get Liz out of the box and crying and being upset about it and then coming out and fighting for her life and so forth. It was the scene after, when I had to like download the team and all of that just happened. So anyway, as far as the gin goes, that's the thing. It's like you just pointed out, like, that's how much we take on every episode. And you just kind of have to like go about doing the next task, which is like the next scene at hand, which is why for me, unlike a Blacklist fan, I don't relish in the details or like absorb and understand each Blacklister. You know, they just kind of like float in and out of my life as I try my best to just, stay afloat with this material. I'm on the same ride as you guys, except my ride is all year round. It's not like for an hour once a week.
Yeah. Well, Troy thinks the characters are real, so just ignore him.
One lives next door to me, actually.
I have to ask you what you mean by that. What do you mean one lives next door to you?
I actually have a mother that lives next door who has a developmentally challenged child. So she's an absolute sweetheart, and the kid is fantastic. He comes over and plays with the dogs all the time.
And she's a Blacklister? Oh, you think of her as the djinn?
No, I think of her more as Lady Ambrosia sometimes.
Oh, Lady Ambrosia was the one who was killing kids.
Yeah.
Oh, the butterflies.
The butterflies.
You know, that you got to remember where I was with that, because I never went out into the Liz never went out into the woods with Lady Ambrosia. Liz never even had a scene with Lady Ambrosia. Liz had scenes with the autistic boy who had escaped the compound. Remember?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
That's why I'm not really all that informed about her, because I really have to focus on my storylines, and my storyline was this kid and like figuring out how to get information from him and communicate with him, and also what he meant to keeping my child at the time. You know, mm-hmm. I think that was a real pivotal point for Liz, is that she discovered that she might actually be a good mom, despite the fact that like she lives in a treacherous world.
Troy, you make me a little nervous as a person. So coming back to your character, you've gone through, I mean, Liz has gone through insane amounts of ups and downs, and kind of down a rabbit hole of sorts. So I'm curious for you, what has been the most exciting and challenging aspects of doing that, of playing that?
The challenge for me, the most challenging thing has been learning how to deal with the response of living as an actress trying to do a job in the world now. You have a lot more exposure to, especially if you choose to be on social media and on the internet, a lot more exposure to people's reactions to you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it took me learning how to feel okay with what I was doing no matter what anyone said. You know, I had to get to a point where I owned my work and what I was doing. And I also, I took as much control over making Liz strong and a formidable character as I could. And that took time too, because I was new to a show and I didn't know what kind of influence I could have. I'd never had a voice on any other job before. But mm-hmm. once Liz became an essential character to the show, then I started to be able to say, you know, guys, I don't think that she would do this here. And I think that she should know about that a little bit more instead of be oblivious, you know. And because I don't know if you remember, but early on, nobody liked my character.
I did. I mean, I think.
Well, but you remember people.
Yeah,
people
I do.
I say nobody, but you remember I got made fun of a lot.
Yeah.
We blame the wig more than anything, Megan.
It was, but then that became more like that fed the, it just fed the beast of the internet, and every people were saying really harsh things about her for the first season. But this story gets happier. Don't worry. Don't feel bad for me. The story gets really good, actually. So, and actually being made fun of becomes a part of the story. It makes it perfect. So I learned after that year that I needed to take control of how my character looked, despite the fact that women especially don't really have creative control in these environments. There are multiple emails to multiple executives about how a female character should look. Mm-hmm. And the female who plays that character is not copied on those emails. And those emails are obsessive. It's the thing that they talk about more than anything on the show. And I learned that. That was a huge, huge awakening for me because, you know, every day I was going to work, working crazy, crazy amounts of time. I mean, Liz was ubiquitous in season one. She was in every scene. And I was getting pins stuck in my head, and I had to wear this, what I ended up calling, like, I'm not going to go there because then that's another, like, hashtag for people to use.
Yeah,
but
no more hashtags.
I ended up in this situation, and it was hard. It was very hard because I was physically and mentally fatigued and then having to deal with, you know, what I thought was going to be like a foray into having an actual, like a career where like people would finally be watching what I had been working on doing. Mm-hmm. I'd been working on being an actor for decades. And finally I was doing it for a larger audience and it was like an attack. So I took control of that, of how she looked, and I started to inch, and it's a battle, but I started to inch towards, like, and so did the writers. Everybody sort of saw what was happening. And we all started to work together to bring Liz to a stronger place. Mm-hmm. And it worked. And then, as you all know, last season, she was killed off. And
what?
The miraculous thing that happened was, now, she wasn't permanently killed off. This was always the plan. They were always going to bring me back.
Right.
But the miraculous thing that happened was that the same people who made fun of me were, like, fighting, not maybe the same people, but the same, like, group speak that was making fun of me was, like, fighting to bring me back. And what I think it was my choice to overcome and being made fun of, my choice, you know, and everyone's choice, but like Liz's journey is something that everyone could relate to, even the people who were making fun of her, even the bullies, because the bullies were bullied. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody's been made fun of, and all, especially us nerds. Like we've all been totally, like, you know, picked on, and people have made fun of us making weird designs on our, like, I remember when I was a little kid, I used to, like, take my fingernail and push it into my arm skin, make little drawings.
Mm-hmm.
We're all weird, right? Like, that was a weird thing to do, but I was in class and I was bored out of my mind, that was my only form of visual art at the time. And then the cutest boy in class ever made fun of me for it. So that was horrifying. But everybody has had that feeling. Mm-hmm. And so when people watched this girl get who they made fun of come out on top, it was sort of aspirational, I think, for them. And it created a response that was so surprising to me. I was told by, for instance, John Bokenkamp was like, "Now, Megan, you know, stay off the internet when this happens. Don't look at what people say about you when you die." And I was like, I know. It's going to be like 50-50. There's going to be like half the crowd who's like super happy I'm gone and half that's like, where did she go? Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case at all.
No, people were really angry. And confused, and they didn't know what was going on. And now I'll be honest, we didn't think you were gone at all, because obviously if you pay attention to the timing, it worked out. But a lot of fans did think you were gone, and yeah, it caused a ruckus, if you could use that.
Yeah, you can say ruckus around me.
Okay. I just want to be safe. I don't want to get
any words. Yeah. You're welcome to use geeky words around me for sure.
was that hard ruckus. For you? Because you've got, obviously you had a lot going on at that time, so I'm sure at least you could focus on that personal life. But I'm sure for you, it's still hard to keep that, those secrets. I mean, there's a lot of secrets in the show already. Is it hard for you to keep that away from media and just stay out of it and pretend like you were dead?
It was a challenge. That was a little behind the scenes challenge for sure. Because everybody wants to have the interview. And I just knew, Entertainment Weekly was like, we want to talk to you. And I just knew I was going to say something that I shouldn't say, you know? Mm-hmm. So I said, well, I'll do a written interview, you know, so that I can send it in and have like all the people that need to like weigh in decide whether I should be saying what I'm saying. But for me, the most important thing was just to not lie to the fans. There was definitely some talk about me going out and pretending it was really a death and like, I'm ready to go have my family. I don't want to be on this job anymore. That was like what they wanted me to say. Mm-hmm. My biggest problem with that, I'd say the second biggest problem I had with that was lying to people and the fans. I've told white lies in my life. I'm not innocent of it. I could do it again. But I still like felt like I kind of have a problem with this. My biggest problem with it was that I was telling people that I couldn't keep working because I wanted to have a family, which is asinine.
Uh-huh.
I can have a family and I can work at the same time, guys, thanks. Like, I'm doing it now. It's fine. And so I changed all the stuff on social media over to successfully balancing work and fatherhood. Because I just thought it was ridiculous. Like, if I had been a guy, nobody would have said, why don't you just tell him that you decided to stop working because you wanted to start a family?
It's a great
Have you
point.
Ever heard that before in your life?
I know exactly what you're talking about. My mom she raised me. She's a single mom. And she worked and went to school and raised me. And I think I came out all right. I think you can do it. It's not a problem. But I know, guys, there is a mentality, a stigma. Yes, I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, so that was my biggest problem with like sending that message, especially since I happen to know that most of the people who like Liz Keen are like teenage girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this generation is kind of like shaking off these like double standards a little bit, but I'm hoping they're off by the time these girls are in the workforce, you know? And so I was like, I can't send that message out, guys. Sorry. So I just stayed silent.
Mm-hmm.
I just kept it quiet, and it was actually really nice because then I didn't have to deal with doing any press close to the birth of my daughter and all that stuff. And so I just laid low, knitted a few sweaters.
Yeah, no, and I totally appreciate that as a father of a teenager, right? It's trying to battle this concept of media barrage and what do you allow, what social media do you allow in, and what emojis do you let them have, and it moves so fast now. They lose their innocence, and you really want them to have that innocence, but yet understand how to operate in a media-infested world.
Absolutely. I think for me, what I want to do is teach her how to build a computer before she even uses one.
Ooh, I like that.
And then teach her how to program a computer. I don't even know anything about it, but teach her computer science, like not me teach her because that would be a disaster, but like have someone teach her computer science before she even starts using it as a consumer.
I like that.
That's my aspiration anyway.
I like where your head's at. I really appreciate you mentioning the bullying thing because as fans, you know, we're obviously on Twitter and we'll see some of the comments and it does get, I mean, it's with any show, so it's not just Blacklist or anything, but I think sometimes people forget that actors are people and they're just playing a character. Yeah. There's no need for, I mean, I get that they get emotionally invested in the character and that's great and that does well for the show, but it should never be a personal attack. And sometimes
And no time in history has an actor really had to see, you know, or really had been exposed to the going down the possible rabbit hole of like masochism that is the comment section on Twitter.
Yeah.
which is something that I learned to avoid, but it took time. It took me making the wrong decisions in that space to like learn how to handle that. So this is the first time when you've had exposure to people's inner criticism. And what you know as an actor is that you're going to have to put yourself out there for critics to adjudicate you. But you don't have to read the Times, you know, like that week. Like, just don't read it. There have been actors ever since the studio system who have just chosen to avoid those outlets that they know are going to have the reviews. And that's kind of what you have to do now with the internet is like, how do I participate and be accessible to fans in the way that they enjoy and in a way that has become an aspect of entertainment, being, you know, social media, but protect myself. And that is a balance.
Well, then let me segue to the Tom Keene situation, since we were talking about how people respond on the internet. I'm on the internet, and I've talked a lot on the podcast, which you probably may or may not have heard, but I've talked about the Tom and Keene relationship. And you know, he has kind of went from this bland school teacher to this ass-kicking man of action. And as a viewer, me personally, this is just, I'm in the minority, I understand that. But I always kind of struggle with the Liz and Tom relationship because for me, I have a hard time getting through some things. Maybe it's because I'm a father, maybe it's because of how I am, I don't know. But I was kind of curious how you feel about where they are in their lives as characters. And do you understand what I mean? Where it's kind of hard for me to get past some of the stuff.
Yeah. It doesn't really help me play the character to have a personal, like a point of view. I don't really step outside their relationship anymore. I used to, but now I think it's a relationship that's fraught. They're extremely imperfect people. They're just drawn to one another because they both have a similar past and they found family in one another. Like they don't know where. They don't know who their parents were. They're both orphaned people. And then in adulthood, they found a connection, I guess. And I think that this is also a network show. It's like I said, a comic book. So it's supposed to be sexy and fun. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
That's what I think. I think about that now more than anything, and I don't take it too seriously, like I tend to do. I try to have a sense of humor about it. And in the past, I feel like I've expressed views that are just taking it too seriously. And I think that when I see fans taking it too seriously too, I think, well, at least they're invested, but I kind of wish they would just enjoy the ride. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think that it's a form of entertainment that's going to encourage certain kinds of behavior in everyday people because it's such a heightened reality.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think all the things that we deal with, especially in Liz's life, do sort of speak to people. For instance, when we were talking earlier about the Lady Ambrosia episode and Liz finally discovering that she could be a good mom and bring this child into the world, even though it's a really treacherous place. I think women now feel that way 100%, whether they're in touch with it or not, becoming mothers. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the things that are happening politically in our country and climate change and terrorism, every day you read news that is horrifying, and yet you're still deciding to bring like an innocent into the world and raise them because you believe that you personally can make one more good human being and that the world needs that right now. I mean, these are decisions that like everyone understands who is a parent. And so I think that that's why people think, oh, all of the blacklist is about my life, you know, but it's just like, no, it's not. The stew maker is not about your life.
I certainly hope not.
This is a comic book fantasy. Yeah. It's a horror movie. It's a spy thriller. It's a heightened genre escapist form of entertainment.
If this was like my life, I would want a new one. It's just too stressful. I couldn't do it.
This is my life, so.
That's funny.
And I'm very fortunate for that, actually.
It's interesting when you think about your role on the show as an FBI profiler. Andrew Kendall, one of our fans, wanted to know, in researching that profiling concept, did it change the way you as a person like view other people, especially being out there in New York?
That's a really, really good question. I think that everything that I do really, I try to have it change me and make me more aware and better as I function in my life. Mm-hmm. That being said, I'm on a network TV show and any actor who's ever worked on one knows. So I'm not going to like be full of it right now and tell you that, oh, I did all this really intense research. There is no time to research anything that isn't on the page. You've got to know what's coming out of your mouth. You've got to know what you're saying. But the way it works is time-wise, you go through pilot season, especially if you're an actor who isn't famous like I was when I got this show. Mm-hmm. So you audition for like lots of stuff. And if you could imagine someone who's on like one of those like gladiator courses on TV, you know, mm-hmm. who's like jumping into the water and walking to the other side to get the flag and then crawling up the geodesic dome and like, you know, all the crazy things they have to go through. That's basically what pilot season is like. You're just sort of like in this crazy mess of a storm and you like get out the other side and you have a part. I happen to have like the coolest part of that whole pilot season, by the way. It was just like the best female role of the whole thing. And that was very exciting. But then I felt this pressure, like, oh my God, I have to know everything there is to know about being a psychological profiler and what it's like to have gone through Quantico, right? And I felt like that. Guys, Quantico wouldn't let me go there. I asked.
Oh, that's not right.
I couldn't find anyone who could get me into Quantico. I was bummed about it. Mm-hmm. And moved on. Finally, I was like, maybe I could sit down and talk to an FBI agent about it. There weren't any FBI agents who were interested in speaking to me about what it's like to be.
You're destroying the myth.
So I literally just had to go, and this was a very naive thing for me, because the reality is that the best thing you can do is just go to the story, figure out where you are in it, what are all the circumstances, and play those circumstances. I read some books. I'm trying to think of the one in particular that actually had a character in it who's a real-life man whose last name is Wrestler. And John Bogenkamp got the character from that book. I'll think of it by the end of this. It's been 3-some-odd years since I read it. But that being said, I don't go through my life like profiling people or anything like that. But the last 3.5 years have changed me tremendously in other ways, not because of the criminal profiling aspect of Liz Keene. And I also have started to, and you'll see in season four, I decided that the next way to pump up Liz's strength is to bring back her superpower. And her superpower is her ability to psychologically profile anyone.
Yes.
So I said, guys, Aran has a superpower. Samara's the badass with all the weapons, and she's got a superpower. Cooper's superpower is his ability to delegate with that beautiful voice and his ability to cut through like all the madness and figure out exactly what needs to be done. Wrestler's superpower is he's a man of the law. But what's Liz's? And I said, it's this profiling thing. Let's bring it back. So you'll see a lot more in season four.
Can I ask you, you mentioned wrestler. If I paid you, like PayPal'd you like $20, would you mess up Diego's hair on camera for me? Because it never moves, ever.
I'm doing it. I promise I'm going to make a video for you guys.
God bless you.
It'll be like one of those new boomerang things, and I'll put it on the internet of me messing up his hair.
I would appreciate it. It would make my life better. We've got another one from Carol Lander. She's curious, which storyline have you liked the most? Which was the most brutal to film?
Brutal? Anytime you see me doing stunts and snow in the background. That was the craziest. Season two, when Red gets shot. There were gusts of cold wind that just like broke through to like the marrow of your bones that day in that alleyway. It was rough. And then in season, I think one, Madeline Pratt, at some point the effigy was stolen, or she had gotten it taken out of the embassy, and like they were a gang of dudes were running through the streets with it and trying to get it away from us. And Liz is out on that. And Wrestler jumps off the bridge and chases, tackles one of them. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah, totally.
So we were on the water, and it was like the dead of winter when you were shooting that. So it's really weather. It's just like shooting in the elements of New York City is really brutal. It's like shoot. I think that it's just, it's probably like second only to The Revenant is what I like.
Oh, wow. Not the Leonardo DiCaprio Revenant?
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's ugly. Yeah. That's ugly.
Let's see. Leanne asks, what have been your favorite B stories that don't involve the Liz character?
Yeah. I thought about that one, but I didn't really get anywhere with it, because remember earlier when we were talking about how I just focus on my stuff, just to get more speak in that. I of course read the whole series, and I know it, but I don't really invest. So, but I have to say one of my favorite characters is Mr. Kaplan.
Yes.
I love Susan Blomart. I think she's a fantastic woman, and she's brought a lot of really good stuff to the show. Her relationship with Reddington is one that I really love.
Do you, are you nervous for her? I mean, obviously you can't tell us anything, but as a viewer, are you nervous for her going into season four?
Yeah, I think that I understand why viewers would be definitely nervous for her.
Okay.
Red does not, if you just look at like the pattern of his behavior, it does not bode well for Mr. Kaplan, unfortunately.
We'll see. Yes, we will see. Tony Jerome Head said, how have you as an actress evolved over the last three seasons?
Evolving as an actress is something that, you know, is hard to really quantify for me. I can tell you things that I really have observed. If I just juxtapose like day one Blacklist to yesterday at work, I'm much calmer in between scenes. I used to try to work myself up really in between scenes. And, James would always say that I was dissipating my energy.
What does that mean exactly?
Like, whenever I would try to work myself up, like I'd do some push-ups before an emotion, before the scene where I knock the lamp over and stab him with the pen in the neck, I was like really trying to get worked up. But now I just go to the story, and I realize that the energy is going to come as a response to my mental involvement in the circumstances. So I don't need to dissipate my physical energy. I can actually generate energy by being calm and focusing on the given circumstances of the script at that time. I've gotten much more efficient. I used to have to come home and spend 4 hours learning lines after like a 12 to, you know, 14 to sometimes 16 hour day. Mm-hmm. I would have to like, I'd have to spend so much time learning lines. And that's a part of my brain that is definitely developed. And all this sounds kind of boring, but it's really, really helpful for me.
No, honestly, I,
also,
I love
I didn't know I was so emotionally available when I started this job because I could never really get emotional in the audition room because mm-hmm. there was so much pressure and it was just such an awkward situation that I wasn't really open. But then they kept calling for Liz to be emotional on the show. And because I felt much more comfortable on set, surrounded by people I knew, I was able to get in touch with that much more easily. And as the show has gone on, it's become a real strength, I think, for me.
And then a final one here, Megan. I thought this one was really great from Linda Hood Cheney. She wants to know, what question do you wish someone would ask because you were dying to answer it, but no one ever asks the question?
Well, people always ask about what it's like to work with James, but I always wish that they would ask what it's like to work with all the other cast members too.
Absolutely.
Because I really have gotten so much from every relationship on this show. It's the longest I've ever worked with the same group of people. And so I'll tell you, Harry Lennox is a consummate professional and very kind and intelligent. Of all the people on the show, I'd say I've always felt like he goes out of his way to make me feel appreciated. And when you're working really hard, it's important that people around you sort of like do that for you, and I've learned that from him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll go my whole career now going out of my way to make people feel appreciated because of Harry Lennox. Amir Arison has an enthusiasm, like I mentioned before, for his work that is contagious. He's obviously an incredible actor, and he brought just sunlight into a very dark room. You go to the war room, and what would the war room be without Aram? And he does the same thing. He is very supportive of me and like caring and a good friend. And he always shows up to work and he's excited to be there. And it's infectious and it's a great lesson. You can make the world around you you can just lift it up. Merjan Marnot is extremely intelligent and she's taken this opportunity to write a feature and she's working on developing it. She's got producers attached and she wants to direct it. And she has incredible taste and she's very, very cultured. And she's always going to see new plays and she's talking about them. And she kind of lets things sort of roll off her back. So what you see on screen is that like grounded kind of fiery energy that she's got. And it translates. I mean, Samar isn't as fleshed out as some of the other characters, but she brings so much just in sheer presence that it doesn't matter. And that's a huge lesson, you know,
mm-hmm.
you just have to like be there and you can fill the scene. And Diego is actually really playful, you guys. I know that sounds crazy because Wrestler is written like so
stoic.
He's such a party pooper.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very professional too, like in this weird dichotomy where he can be he can turn it on and off at the right times. Like, he knows when it's time to be, to enjoy the people around him, and he knows when it's time to get down to work. So I really like that. And then Ryan Eggold, I think he's the last one here, is probably one of the more seminal coworkers of my life so far, because I work with he and James the most. And Ryan is very accommodating, very sort of like, it's so easy to work on a scene with him because he works with me. There's something he has that I can never have, which is that he's really cool. You know, like, you watch Spy, Tom Keene, and you're like, he kind of exudes that, like, James Dean kind of cool. That unfortunately I can't attain that, and I won't take that with me. But it's been really nice to watch how, like, other actors just get to be, and he has a lot of self-awareness, so he knows what he's good at. And I have learned that too, like, just be more self-aware and know exactly what you're bringing to the table. So those are the other people who I have to say make this show run. Like, they're great, great actors who without them, there would be no Blacklist. There would be no place for James to go be his magnificent, entertaining, incredible self, you know, like, just like the funniest, like, every time Red comes on, you light up and you're so excited because it's going to be a great scene. And, but without these guys, there would be nowhere for him to play. And so, like, I just always wish that people would ask about them more, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you mentioned Amir. I want to point out, I saw his, have you seen his new movie, Before the Sun Explodes? He's really good in it.
Of course he is.
Yeah, well, of course.
I have no doubt. I have not seen it, unfortunately.
You should check it out. It's a good movie.
Yeah, of course he's great in it. And he's going to work forever, and he's going to do really good work even after this is over.
I'm sorry, Troy. I didn't mean to cut you off, Troy.
No, I was just going to say, and when James does those scenes where you just kind of light up when he shows up, it's just punctuated by you, Megan, because the eye rolls when he tells those stories, like, oh my gosh, do we have to listen to another one? Just brilliant. I laugh every time.
Oh, thank you. That's funny. Yeah, well, those are somewhat genuine, I have to say. I've listened to a lot of Red stories.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And I kind of got to the point where I was like, how would Liz has to feel the same way I do about this. This is ridiculous. Is he really, like, now? Come on, Red. Now? You're going to go into a story?
It's very reminiscent. Every time I see it, it reminds me, every time I try to tell my daughter a moral lesson, that's exactly what I get, that look. So I appreciate it. It reminds me a lot of life.
And daughters, right?
The yes.
Father-daughter relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not that you guys are father and daughter. Dear God, don't write emails. I don't want any emails.
Sorry. I'm not saying that.
I know you're not. I know you're not.
But we do exude sort of a dynamic that is similar.
Yes.
I think that is essential to the show. And no one can dispute that. You know.
I do want to ask you a question. I know that I know our time is coming to an end. And it's really important to me. I'm a real behind-the-scenes kind of person. So I kind of want to know, you know, we know a lot about Liz Keene. We've watched 3 years of her. But we don't really know a whole lot about Megan Boone, the actress. Can you talk a little bit about yourself and, like, when you first realized this is what you wanted to do with your life?
Oh, I feel like I've been talking about myself for an hour.
Yeah, that's what people want to hear.
Maybe do it a different way, because there was that short film you directed. Is that something that you want to go back to? Is maybe writing a little bit more and directing a little bit more?
I think after The Blacklist, I'm going to take a break from acting for a while, unless some opportunity comes by that I just can't say no to. But I mostly see myself sort of figuring out a way to contribute to story from all different places behind the camera, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The short that I directed was a time when I wasn't getting a lot of work acting, and I needed to find a way to, like, be creative. And I went back to a memory of myself when I was a little kid, and they had this project at school where you would bring all your eggshells from breakfast and you'd put them in a mortar and pestle and you would crunch them all up and you would put them in the garden. And my favorite thing to do when I was in kindergarten was to go into the garden and work in the garden. And so, I knew that chickens sat on their eggs.
Okay.
Saved, right?
Uh-huh.
So my little kindergarten brain was so excited that I'd finally remembered to bring my eggs to school because I had continued to forget. And I finally remembered. So I didn't want to mess them up. So I sat on them all the way to school. I wanted to keep them safe. And so by the time I got to school, they were already crushed. I couldn't put them in the mortar pestle because the eggshells were crushed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was devastated.
Aww.
So I just took that as like a genesis of an idea, and I made a little short film that is about a little boy who is in love with gardening, but when he goes home, he doesn't have a lot of guidance, and his father just kind of turns on the TV, his single father, kind of depressed, just turns on the TV and lets him watch TV, and he watches this show about chickens, you know, and farming. And then he remembers his eggs the next day, but the night before he's gone through this whole like imagination of being a chicken, and his whole living room turns into a chicken coop. And then he goes to school the next day with his eggshells and but they're full eggs, and he sits on the eggs and ruins, he gets egg on his pants. And he's very ashamed and embarrassed. And it's kind of about the naivete of children, and how if you don't tend to them and teach them how to go through life, you can make them feel ashamed. They can start to feel ashamed of their own ignorance. So it's online if you want to watch it.
I do.
Yeah.
And when did you like decide this is what you wanted to do? Is there a moment or?
It wasn't a moment. It wasn't a decision. It was just a really strong pull that I couldn't really resist as a child. And I have to say, the reason I didn't become a director or a writer is because as a young girl, I didn't really see that as an option. I didn't see other women writing and directing. And so I thought that I was supposed to be an actress.
Mm.
It wasn't until I got older that I started to see that this is a way that I could express myself. And so I started to dabble in it. But now I'm sort of waking up and realizing this is really something that was really ingrained in me. And I can be active in other areas too. And I think maybe I would enjoy it, maybe even more. I'd feel more engaged. But being an actress I was compelled 100% by my love of like stories and books and watching plays and even watching my aunt perform cover tunes. You know, she was like she would go to events and sing all these 80s songs. And she was a really like vivacious performer. She would put on lots of costumes and like dance and sing. And I just loved, I wanted to be that person entertaining people. So that's kind of where it came from.
I love those stories. I was joking with Troy, and if you don't think it's funny, that's fair. But I was wondering when you first got into this business, because of the way that agents can be from the little that I know, did anyone try to make you take a stage name like Megan Boom or something?
No. Megan Boone is a pretty good name.
I like it.
But they did tell me to lose weight.
Oh, Lord.
They told me that the way I got an agent was that I did a stage play. I produced it. I was sort of spinning my wheels for a couple years in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pounding the pavement, you know, going up and down Wilshire Boulevard with like headshots and resumes and no tape, and like trying to get into the agent's offices and like tell them, I'm an actress. Would you like to send me on audition? That didn't really work. I had to get my creeped a few people out. But I sat down after a couple of years of feeling really like frustrated with hitting my head up against a wall. And I was like, what is it that you want? Make a list. And I said, I want to be able to pick characters that mean something to me in my life at the time. And I would like to, through those characters, connect in like a way with the audience and have them experience something that I'm also experiencing. And so that we can all feel kind of together in this whole thing. And then I realized like all the things that I've listed, I could just do on my own. That lie that you need like all the suits in Hollywood to tell you it's okay to do all this stuff is bogus. So I just went to the library and just found a play. After a year of reading plays, I found one that I could produce. And I did it, and I got like a lot of, it was called Limonade du Jour, and I played this like French chanteuse. And then, I was picked up by a manager, and he told me that, I was great. I did a really good job, but I was using too many hand gestures and that the skin under my arms was flapping.
Oh my.
And then I needed to like lose some weight.
Lord.
And yeah. And, I have the same body now that I did then. It's fine. It works just fine for me.
I don't know how to respond to that in a proper way, so I'm just going to say absolutely.
No need.
You're made who you are, and you should own it because you are who you are, and that's the best thing you can do for anybody out there.
Yeah, and you are how you function is what I'm learning. It's all about function and health and how you can use what you have as a tool and what your strengths and weaknesses are and being aware of that and how those strengths and weaknesses can contribute to the world around you. And I feel pretty proud of how I contribute to the story and my co-stars. And I work on it because I've been given so many messages about how I should be critical of myself. And I think that like, that's what I ultimately want to try to do with being in a position of having like a lot of like girls that watch Liz Keen and think she's pretty cool or think that they like her. I think that I'd like to like change the conversation from, you know, all those 2D images around you that tell you what beauty is and like what you should look like. Well, you're three dimensional. You're actually a three dimensional person moving through space. So what are you going to do in that space?
I love how seriously and sincere you take that. Honestly, as a dad and as a, someone who has a daughter I'm trying to raise in that respect, I really do, sincerely, I do appreciate that.
Well, thank you. It means a lot to me because the pain that it's caused me and all the women that I know. We have invested countless hours using our brains to obsess over our human bodies so that they look like these airbrushed two-dimensional images. We could have been using our brains to solve issues that are a real problem for people now. And I think we could have been pretty successful in it. Women could engineer a world that is so different than sort of horrific one that we see today. And those are the themes sort of the Blacklist too. That the world is a really ugly place. And Liz is sort of this character who is both being jaded by it, but also trying to find goodness in it at the same time.
And we've talked about that a lot on our podcast, how diverse the cast is and how it's not a typical network show, so to speak. And we really do appreciate that.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's why it's found success. It's really not typical.
It's not.
We're doing our best to balance being one that follows enough of a formula to be able to like sustain in a 22 episode season and try to find some originality.
Well, I know we're already infringing on a lot of your time, and I really do we both really appreciate you taking the time.
No problem.
Can I ask?
And I appreciate you guys too for being such gentlemen. That's why I came on. So thank you so much. You want to ask another question? I think I heard you.
Well, no, this one is totally for the fans, because if I don't ask it, they'll get mad at us and probably send you tweets. So can you tease anything?
God forbid.
Yeah, I don't want any more tweets, and I'm sure you don't either. I mean, only positive ones. Good stuff. The season 4 is coming up, and is there anything you can tease or tell fans to look forward to in the upcoming season? And I don't want spoilers. I'm an advocate for no spoilers. So anything you can tease about the upcoming season?
Well, Liz is in the custody of Kirk, who says he's her father. And so a lot gets revealed this season, answers to things that long-standing questions that fans have had about Liz's parents and where she comes from and why she's in so much danger. Mm. And it's not Red. Red is not the reason she's in so much danger. Mm. That's what we thought all along, but it's actually because of where she comes from. So you'll get some answers to the questions in her mythology, I think.
Ooh. Every answer leads to another question. Super exciting.
Ain't that the truth? I mean, not just with the show, but...
Well, if you don't have that constant state of exploration, then what's the point of living, right?
Exactly.
I like answers. They're okay. I don't want a constant state of questions as Troy does. Troy likes to ask questions about everything.
I'm exploratory.
Yeah, that's the word. Well, Megan, thank you so much. I can't even tell
Thanks,
you how
guys.
Much we appreciate you sticking around way longer than you ever intended. And I hope
I know. It's okay. It was nice talking to you. And I just really wanted to do this to show you how much I appreciated your gentlemanly conduct.
Thank you.
So, also the fans. I really appreciated how the outpouring of grief. Sorry, guys. But I did when my character died. So, okay, guys. Hey,
come back anytime. Bye. And good luck on the season.
Thank you.
Thanks, Megan.
Troy, I don't know about you, but that was a wonderful interview.
I mean, as a father of a young daughter, right? She's a preteen right now, teenager, almost. I'm speechless right now, just a little bit emotional. I'm so glad that there are strong female characters in the world that my daughter can look up to and know that there's a future that's bright for them and whatever they want to do, and just that they can be good in their own image and good in how they want to present themselves, and they don't have to keep up with the Joneses and do what the media says that they should be. Fantastic. I just applaud Megan in every way, shape, and form for that. Thank you very much as a father. I appreciate that.
Yes, absolutely. My daughter actually is a little older than yours. I started a little younger. I'm not that old. But she just entered the workplace, and she's having to deal with some of what Megan was talking about. So I know very well how true it is, and I just love how sincere she takes it and how deeply she's trying to do it a little different than some people do. And it's not, she's not basing everything around her appearance. She actually wants her art to speak for itself. I really respect that and appreciate that. And also appreciate her coming by. I thought it was a great conversation. It's nice to get more of behind the scenes and how she feels about the character and how she feels about the job and how she feels about what she's doing and what it's like when people, you know, on Twitter do what they do sometimes. Just to get all that information and all that emotion from the person that it directly affects. I thought that was fantastic.
100%.
I do want to say, some people are going to say, well, you didn't ask a whole bunch of Gene Spader's questions. Yeah, I didn't need to. I mean, you can find those anywhere. We wanted to talk to Megan Boone. That's really what we wanted to do.
Yes, and hopefully you connected with her a little bit through that interview. And of course, you'll just love her character even more as season 4 starts off. Out of the country. We're going to be in Cuba to kick off the show. It's going to be fun. It's going to be intense. I cannot wait for season 4 to begin. And we'll be back again every Saturday. The show will drop in the feed. If football schedule dictates, we should be doing 8 in a row before the football takes over on NBC on Thursday night. So 8 weeks of Troy and Aaron. That's a lot of Troy and Aaron.
That's a lot. Well, guys, I think that's going to do it. I hope you have enough excitement in your blood to get you ready for season 4. It is coming soon.
I see what you did there. Blood. B plus, maybe.
And I do want to say Megan did not say they were father and daughter. She was speaking generally.
Generally.
Don't be writing her tweets.
All theory camps are in play.
That's going to conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us all season on Twitter at The Blacklist GSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed, and we use the show's hashtag, The Blacklist. We also have a Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed and join us for the fun.
If you are just checking us out for the very first time, make sure you subscribe to the podcast in iTunes or Google Play Music. 3 seasons of amazing content are there waiting for you. Or even better yet, if you are super busy, then download the Blacklist Exposed app for iOS and Android.
Remember, you can get all the intel and analysis for this and any podcast, including season 1, by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. Or if you're a fan of the YouTube, subscribe to our channel to get your podcast fix over there. And I should mention, here on Golden Sparrow Media, Troy and I just launched our another companion podcast for the show Westworld on HBO. Just go to beyondwestworldpodcast.com.
That's going to be an exciting, exciting show. So if you don't get enough of us here, you can get us twice a week. It's amazing.
It's so much, Troy and Aaron.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
Well, they are not gone, and we can't forget to leave you one more time. What is the question of the week there, Sir Aaron?
What is the first thing you will see, or we will see, in season 4, the very first scene to open the show? What's your prediction? Troy already said it's in Cuba, so I'm going to guess there somebody, Red, is eating a Cuban sandwich.
Ooh, smoking a Cuban cigar while he's singing Michael Row Your Boat Ashore.
All right.
Let's see. It'll never get out of our heads.
We will talk to you soon, guys. I hope you enjoyed the interview.
See you later. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
The Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.